Bible. If you don't have a Bible, there should be one under the seat in front of you or close proximity. We're going to be turning to 2 Corinthians this morning. I make the habit of preaching through books. We started this particular book maybe 4, 5, 6 months ago. And I don't know about you, but I didn't really have that great of a love for 2 Corinthians. I've always loved 1 Corinthians, but 2 Corinthians was just kind of like the addendum that really didn't seem to speak to me so much. But since we've been going through this, I can't tell you how much I've learned about 2 Corinthians and the context in which it was given. And I'm hoping that the rest of you are having the same kind of reception of this as I am. Just remember, the book is a book in response to great repentance that had taken place in the Corinthian church. It's a book of encouragement, not only on the part of Paul, but encouragement for Titus and encouragement for the Corinthians themselves. We know there's been a lot of focus on that up to this point, but we've also gotten to an area in the epistle where there's another clear focus that comes to bear, and that is that Paul is doing a number of things as he's making his way through Macedonia or northern Greece on his way to Corinth, that he's taking advantage of ministry opportunities, but he's also raising money. He's raising money for a specific purpose, and that is to present as a gift a love offering to the Christian church in Jerusalem, because there is famine in the land. And so it's for relief of fellow brothers and sisters that he's raising this money. So let's take a look at chapter 9. We're going to read the whole chapter this morning, do the whole chapter if you can believe that. But all of this ties so closely together, it'd be hard to break it up. So we're going to do the whole thing. For it is superfluous for me to write to you about this ministry to the saints, for I know your readiness, of which I boast about you to the Macedonians, namely that Achaia has been prepared since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them. But I have sent the brethren that are boasting about you may not be made empty in this case, that as I was saying, you may be prepared, lest if any Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to speak of you, should be put to shame by this confidence. So I thought it necessary to urge the brethren that they would go on ahead to you and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gift, that the same might be ready as a bountiful gift and not affected by covetousness. Now this I say, he who sows sparingly shall also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully shall also reap bountifully. Let each one do just as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. As it is written, he scattered abroad, he gave to the poor, his righteousness abides forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You'll be enriched in everything for all liberality, which through us is producing thanksgiving to God. For ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing through many thanksgivings to God. Because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ and for the liberality of your contribution to them and to all, while they also, by prayer on your behalf, yearn for you because of the surpassing grace of God in you. Thanks be to God, for he is his indescribable gift. Excuse me. Well, one of the things interesting going on here, I don't know if you picked up on it or not, is this, and we talked about this when we started this a couple of weeks ago, and that is that Paul was using the Macedonians as an example to the Corinthians to encourage them to give to this love offering. And he boasts about the Macedonians because they were giving out of their poverty. They were people who didn't have much to give from, but they were giving from that, and they were begging and appreciative of the opportunity to do it. Strangely, what Paul reveals here is he's already used in reverse the Corinthians in regard to the Macedonians as an example, because it appears as though the Corinthians have known something about this for some time, and it could be that this was even their beginning, was their idea to raise money amongst the Greek churches in order to give famine relief to fellow brothers and sisters in Christ in Jerusalem. Now, there's some things we're going to talk about today. We don't talk a lot about giving so much here. We talk about it when it comes up in services, but we don't have a giving sermon once a month or once every 6 months or anything like that. The only time I talk about these things for the most part is when we come to particular passages that address these things. One of the things I want to make clear from the beginning, what we're covering here doesn't have anything to do with normal tithes, offerings given to the church. This is stuff that goes above and beyond that for a particular purpose, and the purpose of this love offering is charity. How many people here operate on a budget? You don't have to raise your hand, but I know a lot of people don't think budgets are really that great because budgets tend to have some effect on us in confining us in our ability to spend money when we want to and that sort of thing. But we do know this. We know that typically when people have budgets, they spend less money, right? That means that when opportunities come up, when there's things they need to spend money on, they may have some actually put aside for doing that particular thing. Now, Lori and I don't have a written budget. We kind of have a budget in our head. We know what our monthly expenses are going to be and all that. And we put money aside every week for special things. Look at the government right now. We have a government that's operating without a budget, hasn't had a budget in a couple of years. And obviously the reason for it is this, is we don't want a budget, because if we have a budget, then we're going to be confined in our ability to dole out more money that's just going to put us further in debt. We don't want that limitation. We don't want that restriction. Well, if you think about your personal budget, if you have one, I would imagine it's got some major categories in it, like rent/mortgage, right? Utilities, electricity, water, sewage, things along those lines. Probably a budget item for groceries. Maybe something for doing things fun with the kids. But there are individual categories in that budget. I wonder how many of us have a category, if we have a budget, if we have a category in that budget for charitable giving. See, this is one of the things that the Apostle Paul is encouraging not only the Corinthians to do, but for us to do as well, and that is to plan on giving. It is not our tendency to do that. What our tendency to do is this, is, you know, when the opportunity comes up, the first thing we're going to do, well, I got to spend this money for that and that money for this and et cetera. I don't have any money left, so I can't give anything to this offering. But what Paul's encouraging them to do is to actually make plans to give charitably, so that when the opportunity comes up, you've got things covered. Have we ever even thought about that? Have we ever thought about having that kind of approach to things? The church budget has a benevolence account. Okay. What that means is this, is we know this. We know that as the year progresses, we're going to have people come to us that need to have different kinds of assistance. It may be for utilities. It may be to help cover mortgage payments. It may be for all kinds of things. But we know at the beginning of the year that that's going to happen. Has there ever been a year in the existence of Springs Church that we didn't have people coming needing help? And the answer to that question is no. We have a special account set aside for money, and money gets put in there from your tithes and offerings. It goes into that account. We've gotten other sources that have put money into that particular account so that when the opportunities come up, the money is there to be utilized. If it's not there, what would we have to do? Well, we'd have to go through the whole budget and say, well, we got to pay that. No, we don't have anything left. Sorry. You get the point? that the church plans to give charitably through the year. Let me tell you, you probably don't give near as much as maybe we ought to give. Especially with the economy the way it is, and there's so many people are in very great need today. But my whole point, guys, here is there's a place for corporate giving, because very often people have the idea, you may be thinking this, well, I don't give charitably, I don't give outside of what I give to the church, because I give money to the church has this charity account or benevolence account, and so by giving to the church, I'm actually contributing to the benevolence. So even though I'm not doing it particularly myself, the church is doing it on my behalf. Now let me say something. There is a place for that, but there's also, guys, a place for personal charitable gifts that we do on a personal basis on our own. America has changed. It really has. We would be blind not to realize, and it's changed in lots of ways, and one way that has changed very definitely in more recent years is people have developed in their mindset that the government is the one who is supposed to dole out charity. That we pay taxes, we give money to the government, and then the government actually pays that out to people who are in need. Let me tell you, that concept is totally absent from the Bible. The Bible says this, and that is the people of God are the source of charity. And one of the reasons that the government has taken over is because very often believers have chosen not to do it. People were taken care of 100 years ago, but they weren't taken care of by the government. They were taken care of by their community, and very often that community was a community of believers. Well, charity is not charity if it's imposed. In other words, if people are forcing you to give money charitably to others, that really is not charity. Charity is something we do willingly, desiringly. We want to do it. It's a gift. It's not something that we enter into saying, well, you know what, I realize that I have to do it. Everybody's got to do it. I don't really like doing it, but I don't have any choice. What I'm saying is real charity is there is a choice. You choose to do it or you choose not to do it. When I was a kid, I can remember Walt Disney used to be a lot different than it is now. Loved a lot of the movies, and he had a series on Davy Crockett. And I think Fess Parker was the one that starred in it. I love that. I love the Daniel Boone thing that he was in for years. But there really was a Davy Crockett, and he was a congressman, and or not too early on in the history of the United States. There's a story told about him as he was out on the campaign trail, and he came across a guy named Horatio Bunce. Now, you probably don't know anything about Horatio Bunce, and Davy Crockett didn't know diddly about this guy until that day either, but he was out raising votes. He was going along, just riding along the road, and anytime he came across someone, he'd stop to him and talk to him and say, I'm a candidate for Congress, and I'd really love to have your vote. And he did this with Mr. Bunce, and Mr. Bunce said, you know what, I voted for you before, but I'm not going to do it again. So Davy Crockett said, well, why? Can you tell me why? And it had to do with this. There had recently been a bill that had come before Congress, and what it had to do with was they were raising, or they were going to give $20,000 of relief to victims from a recent fire in Georgetown, in the very vicinity of Washington, D.C. Now, we look at that, and we think that's a good idea. I mean, why wouldn't you do that? Now, this is what Mr. Bunce has to say about it. He says, no colonel of Congress has no right to give charity. Individual and members may give as much of their own money as they please, but you have no right to use a dollar of the public money for such a purpose. It is a precedent fraught with danger to the country. You may verily perceive what a wide door this would open for fraud and corruption and favoritism on the one hand, and for robbing the people on the other. Davy Crockett never once ever voted again for a bill to give charity, because he realized it was unconstitutional for them to do it, that it wasn't what the purpose of the government was. They were overstepping the bounds of the government, because right there, there was favoritism being given, because he brought up a number of examples of people that have suffered equally bad things in their community recently. Where was the federal government? Did they bail them out? You can understand, and you can see how that mentality escapes the vast majority of people in leadership positions today. I mean, we'd have to be blind to believe anything else. In a sense, guys, the church has advocated our responsibility to take care of the poor. In essence, we've let government take it away from us. And it's something that God gave to us, something he would have each one of us do. I would say that we could probably use a good dose of Mr. Bunce right about now, wouldn't you? There's all kinds of ways to save money, set aside money. When we built this building, I can remember people who were coming and saying, you know what, every time I go somewhere, I stop and I get a drink at the Jiffy store. What I'm going to do is, instead of stopping to get drinks every time I pass the Jiffy store, is I'm going to take that money I would have put in there and put it in the pot to build the building. That's how this building got built. A small group of people, 60 people probably in number in those days, no one with great wealth. We raised $350,000 in 2 years. 95% of it came from people in the congregation. Lori and I have this habit, and I don't remember if she started it or I started it, but we don't, when we get change at the store, we don't use that. What we do is we take it home and we put it in a bowl. That way we are purposely saving money that otherwise we would not have. And so what I mean is this, is if I get a bill at the grocery store for $10.50, even if I have 50 cents in change in my pocket, I don't use it. I give them $11. So they give me 50 cents back. When I go home, that dollar goes in the bowl. And let me tell you, it's amazing how rapidly that becomes hundreds of dollars. Now, what we typically do, we haven't used this for charity. Maybe we really ought to think about doing that. But we've used it for trips. It's one of the ways we've been able to fund some of the trips we've been able to take out to Washington and Alaska in the summer, because that money was available, because we just had that purpose of mind of doing that. So there are little things you can do that don't seem to be like they're going to sound like they're going to amount to much, but in time they actually will. So maybe it's time for all of us to think about doing something similar to that, as far as being able to give people who are in need when they need for us to be able to do that. So be ready to give, because let me tell you guys, the opportunity to do it will come. It always does. He who sows sparingly shall also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully shall also reap bountifully. It's amazing in the Bible how often, you know, this picture is used of agricultural kind of things, by Jesus, by apostles, by other people to make particular points. That's because of a lot of things, but one of them is that Israel in those days was very much a agriculturally based economy. Most people grew at least some of what they ate. It was that way in the United States for a long time. Now we realize today that only a few people are involved in actually growing the things that we eat. But the picture that's being painted here basically is this, is if you put a little seed out there, you're going to get a little bit of a harvest. If you put out more seed, you're going to get a bigger harvest. So the point here is that the seed itself, the amount of seed you put out, is the key in what you get out of all of it. Direct relationship between the two as far as the seed and the harvest goes. Remember, we said a couple of weeks ago that the sinfulness of man makes his heart stingy, but the grace of God makes him generous. Do you remember that? I hope if we don't get anything else out of today and what we did a couple of weeks ago, that we will go away with that, and we will realize it's the stinginess of our heart that makes us, or the sinfulness of our heart that makes us stingy. But the grace of God makes us generous. There are always people, my friends, who are interested in doing the bare minimum. In other words, people who will say, well, I will do this, that, and the other, but what they're looking for is, what is the least teeny tiny bit that I have to do to be able to get by? How little can it be and still be enough? I can remember talking with a man one time, and he told me this. He said, Keith, he said, I won't care if I have to sweep the streets in heaven. I'll just be glad that I'm there. Now, when you hear that, it sounds pretty good, doesn't it? It sounds like a very humble kind of a statement, but I knew this man. It's not what he meant. He was a guy that from his life was obviously very satisfied with doing the least amount you have to do to get by. That was his thinking. I don't want to do any more than I have to. So if I just wind up sweeping streets, I want to do that little bit that I have to do to get to that point. And I don't want to go any further beyond that. There are people with that mindset. I want to do the very minimum. But guys, when we begin to understand and realize the greatness of the grace of God, how can we possibly have that mindset? When we measure what He has done for us in light of what He asks us to do for Him. Christians are generous because our Father in heaven is generous. Christians are generous because we have been the recipients of that great generosity. Some of you know that Riley plants a garden. Some of you have seen his garden. If you've seen his garden, you know that his garden is bigger than my whole yard is. Some people might call this garden a small field. It's gotten bigger over the years. He hasn't expanded it in the last few years, but for a long time, it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. We know that he was raised on a farm part of his childhood. We know he's kind of got that green thumb, and if you've been to their house, their whole backyard looks like a nursery. But in the springtime, the Smiths nor the Statons ever have any want for fresh veggies. They are always there. I mean, to the point that you get tired of eating fresh squash. And you get tired of eating this and eating that. And not only that, there's so much that there's a lot of stuff is frozen. And so in the middle of the wintertime, you can also have really good veggies too. Last year, I think he did a fall garden, and he said he was thinking about doing it again. So, I mean, now, let me just say this, that Riley could do what he does on a much smaller scale. It'd be a lot easier for Riley to have a garden that produced enough stuff for he and Nancy. And he could settle for that. I mean, that would still be a good deal. He's still raising some of the things that they eat, so they're not spending their money and doing things like that. But that's not Riley's mindset at all. He does what he does, obviously, because he wants other people to benefit from it. And some other people, not just Statons and Smith, have benefited from this endeavor from him through the years too. You see the difference? He does it for the love of people. every inch it gets bigger, the more cost it is to him, the more work it is to him. Because let me tell you, he does have a little help every now and then, but a lot of times he doesn't have any help. Every year he talks about not doing it again. I think he did, actually a few years he did miss it a while back. Not many. He talks about giving it up every now and then. But, you know, February gets here and, you know, the frosts are kind of over and March is coming and plans start being made. And so there's produce given. And we really appreciate it. I don't like the string beans or green beans, but I love the squash and I love the conch peas. And he's grown some of the best broccoli I think I've ever had in my lifetime. And I'm the only one that really loves fresh tomatoes in our house. But I appreciate those too. But do you see the difference between someone that does something just to get by and someone who does something because he has a bigger picture, and the bigger picture is I want to do this as an act of love for other people. I want to say this to you because I think people could misconstrue what Paul's talking about here. He's not saying this, okay. If you want more, you're stingy, your covetousness and all those kinds of things have taken grab a hold of you, and what you need to do is just sow more so you can get more yourself. It's not really what Paul is talking about here. He's not saying to people, okay, you're satisfied with what you're getting, but maybe you want some more. All you got to do is put a little bit more seed in there and you'll get more harvest. That's not what Paul is teaching here at all. We don't do what we do for self-benefit. We don't do what we do for self-reward. We do it for the joy of giving. We do it for the joy of God. We do it for the love of God. We do it because of the great generosity of our God and our loving Father. There is a joy that comes in giving that you will never experience apart from it. There's nothing like looking into the life of another person and realizing that whatever you contributed, as small as it might be, gave them a better way, gave them a better life. There's a joy that comes in it that escapes us if we don't do it. If we let that stinginess of our heart restrict us. There's always reasons, guys. There's always excuses that we can come up with to talk ourselves out of doing just about anything. It's not the right time. I had put that money aside because I want to do this, that, or the other. There are people in this room right now that I know of, they have real needs that could be very easily met. And let me tell you, very often they are, because I know this, that when we've made things known to people, the people in this congregation have stepped up and they have given and they have given and they have given. And I think for the most part, they've given for the right reason. Not because someone twisted their arm, not because they felt guilty. Guilt's not a good reason, guys. Because they've experienced the generosity of God and they've experienced the generosity of his people, and they want to be a part of it. Not just one who gets, but one who gives. That's where the joy is. I've had some very precious gifts that I've received over the years. I've talked a couple of weeks ago about, well, Walter's here today, wasn't here the other day, but about the party that they gave us when we were getting ready to leave Uganda when we were there, and you know how these people who had nothing really reached deep down in their pockets just to buy ground nuts and rice and tea so that they could have a little party for us, who really didn't need any of that. Every one of us in that room that was receiving this, we would have much rather been giving it because we didn't need it. They needed it a whole lot more than we needed it. But that spoke to us in a way that just about nothing else ever would have. When you see people who have nothing that are willing in their nothingness to give out of it, and it costs them something, it means real sacrifice on their part. In other words, for them to give us that meal might have meant that for some of them, they weren't going to have anything to eat the next day. But it was important enough to them to participate. They wanted to be part of it. They wanted that privilege. They wanted to know the joy of giving. Some very precious gifts. That's one that I will never forget, ever. Most of you know that the boys and I used to do quite a bit of fishing. It's been a couple of years now since I've been fishing, except when I was in Alaska, I guess. All that came to be for a reason, and that was because Lori put aside money, and she wound up buying us a fishing boat. If that had never happened, then we would not have all those memories, because if you talk with Steve and if you talk with Matthew, one of the things you'll hear is about fish stories, because we did quite a bit of it. I don't have the boat anymore. Caroline reminds me of that all the time. But we really enjoyed it. But again, that was I don't know where she came up with the money to buy that thing, because it wasn't cheap back in those days. The Statons didn't have disposable money. How she able to, she did that, I don't know. But there's another gift I want to tell you about. If you've been here a long time, you've heard me tell you this, tell this story before. But it had to do with fishing. Years ago, when we first started doing this, again, we didn't have a lot of disposable money. In other words, we didn't have extra money to throw away on things or to buy things with. And the reel that I had wore out. Now, Matthew had, for months, several months, had worked. Matthew always worked. Stephen's worked. They've earned their money. And he had gone to Walmart and bought himself a brand new bait casting reel, which in those days, I didn't like bait casters. I used a spinning reel. But Matthew came home with this reel, and he'd saved up for months to buy this reel. And he came home and showed it to me, you know, and I saw this reel and all that. The next thing I know, he comes to me with a gift. And what it is this, is he took that reel back to Walmart, got his money, and then bought me a spinning reel. That doesn't bring tears to your eyes, I don't know what will. You see, guys, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about giving for the joy of giving. And that giving always costs us something. It always does. And one of the greatest joys is this, in realizing, you know what, I can let go of this thing that I wanted so much, so tightly, to give some benefit to somebody else. But it all stems from this. If you're a believer in Jesus Christ, you have received the most precious gift that anyone in all of existence for all of eternity could possibly receive. That is the gift of salvation that's freely given to you. Because God is a God of love, because God is a God of compassion, because God is a generous God. Because in the face of God, we are all nothing but paupers. And he has given to us the most precious gift. Who here would give their son to save people like us? Let me tell you, you can't have either one of mine. Maybe I would give myself, but I'm not giving Stephen, and I'm not giving Matthew for you. But our Father in heaven did that. And the Son willingly came. And he accomplished for us what we can't, what we don't even want to do. He lived that life of obedience for us so that through our faith in him, his righteousness becomes our righteousness. That which was unholy becomes holy. Those who were not of the children of God are now the children of God. We are the family of God himself. You want a picture of giving? Let me see you beat that one. Can't do it.